And so that began the initial discussion for what is now Lolo, which is how can we help them stay top of mind with an item of value, with something meaningful and local, with a write-up, with pictures, just something that monthly goes out in an automated way.
You're listening to The Real Estate Sessions, and I'm your host, Bill Risser. With nearly 25 years in the real estate business, I love to interview industry leaders, up-and-comers, and really anyone with a story to tell. It's the stories that led my guest to a career in the real estate world that drives me into my ninth year and nearly 400 episodes of the podcast. And now, I hope you enjoy the next journey. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 382 of the Real Estate Sessions podcast. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for telling a friend. Today, we're going to talk to another real estate entrepreneur. His name is Matthew Simpson. He is the co-founder of Lolo. Lolo is a relationship retention tool. They curate a local gift of the month to help agents stay in touch with their sphere at a really affordable price. It's such a cool tool. It really lets these local businesses kind of shine instead of the big box brands that are always kind of used a lot by agents. So let's get this thing going. And oh, by the way, we'll talk a little bit of ACC basketball too. So stick around if you're into that. Let's get it going. Matthew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
This is going to be a lot of fun. You and I met on, we'll call it on the circuit, on the booth circuit, you know, at the real estate events, hanging out. And many times we ended up pretty close together. And I love what you're doing with Lolo. We're going to get deep into that as well. But yeah, it's just going to be, should be a lot of fun today.
Brings me back to throwing some postcards at you a little bit while you were on a call.
We'll bring
you. I don't have any of those to throw at you.
Yeah, good. We're about 1,000 miles away, right? 800 maybe. That helps a lot. So I know you're based in the Nashville area, right? Are you a native of Tennessee? Are you a Nashville native?
I am. I would say I was born in North Carolina, but I moved. It was only because my dad was in North Carolina for school. And so we moved back when I was 2.5. So grew up all the way through high school in Nashville.
So I've been to Nashville twice. Once was way back in the day when I was working for the Padres. There was a business meeting I got to attend. I think the Predators were in their first couple years. I don't think they've been around a long time. Went to a Predators game, saw where the Titans play. They were building it. So that should put in your mind about the time frame I'm talking about. It was in the 90s.
Right, late 90s.
Yeah. And my second trip was recently for a conference. And man, Broadway and that whole area downtown and the riverfront, and I'm sure for someone who's grown up there, it's just kind of like, yeah, I'll take you down there if someone comes to town. Do you hang out down there yourself? I'm just curious. Is downtown a part of your life?
Not really. I would say I go down there to go to Predators games, Titans games, and when a friend who's in town really wants to go down and see it. But other than that, you know, it's become a little bit like a Mardi Gras every night. You know, there's the streets are full, the bars are packed. It's a great experience for someone who's in town for a conference or an event or just to have fun, but not your everyday night on the town for someone who lives here.
It feels like living there is much like living in Vegas, right? There's a whole community of people that live there and work there and do their thing, but they're just not going near the strip for the most part, right?
As much as I spend time in Vegas, I would say that's a great analogy because, you know, there's a lot of people that would say they live in Vegas and haven't been to the strip in months or even longer.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Your favorite part of living in the Nashville area, growing up there and living there, and maybe to add to that, what's the biggest misconception about, we'll call it Music City, USA?
Well, when I think about what was so special about growing up in Nashville and then comparing it to today, I mean, it was always the people. The people were just so kind, thoughtful, welcoming, just a really community-centric vibe. And, you know, as it's grown, we've had a lot of people from a lot of different places move in. And some of that has changed a little bit, but I still think you would hear a lot of people that really enjoy the community aspect of Nashville and the kind of feeling that the people provide to each other. And I think it's also because there was a very unique groups of people. There's the musician community, there's the business community, the healthcare community, and all of these kind of respected each other. I don't think you find what you would find in some markets like in LA or something where there's a very celebrity aspect to things. At least when I was growing up, you know, I knew or met different people in the music industry, and it wasn't much like you'd bother them or do anything. It was just like another person. And I think that was probably nice for people in the music industry, and one of the reasons they've continued to grow and be respected in this community.
You mentioned, you already mentioned the Titans and the Preds. I think, I know you're a big sports guy, right? I mean, so it's got to be great to have those teams there. I think you remember Terry from a couple of the conferences, and we actually went to a Nashville Sounds game at that conference we were at. So you got, you know, minor league, triple A baseball there as well. So, and I was looking it up, and I don't follow MLS enough to have known this, but you've got an MLS team there, Nashville SC. So it's pretty cool. You got just about everything. And in the college world, you got Vanderbilt, which is, you know, an SEC school, but it seems like their sports level is never really kind of in up to snuff with the rest of the conference.
Well, growing up, there were none of these pro teams here. So Vanderbilt was the ticket when I was a kid. My grandfather went to Vanderbilt, played basketball at Vanderbilt. I was ingrained in Vanderbilt as a kid. There really weren't many other options. And David Lipscomb, which is another university. My dad went there, and my mom. And so ultimately, you know, that was what we grew up going to. And they had a good basketball team, and that was kind of what we cheered for. But they've always had a little bit of trouble in the football world, and I think it will continue to be that way. It's a tough ticket in the SEC. It's hard to be a Vanderbilt fan. I think you always hear people say that, but it's a great school, and so there's a lot of awesome people who went there and live here and try and support them as much as they can. But it is easier now to be a Predators fan or a Titans fan or a Nashville SC fan or a Sounds fan, you know.
So, you know, we've had a few chats, you know, in different cities around the country. And I know that you played basketball growing up. You're a hoops guy. You played some major college basketball, yet you didn't go to Vanderbilt. I want to know what your grandpa had to say. And then what, yeah. Where did you end up going? Let's share that with everybody.
So I was born in North Carolina. And so growing up, I was actually watched the ACC a lot. My dad had done some residency at North Carolina, UNC. So I was a Tar Heel fan, but just, you know, paid attention to North Carolina schools and always felt like I would like to go back over to North Carolina. And so I ended up going to Wake Forest University for college and just had the good fortune, honestly, of joining a team that Tim Duncan came in with me in that freshman class, and really the rest is history, because he wasn't highly recruited, but turned into one of the best players ever. And, you know, we had a great team for a few years. And as I was telling you earlier, I didn't get to play much, but I got a great seat to a lot of great games. Unfortunately, got injured my sophomore year, and then kind of never really, I was scraping to get to the level to be able to play to begin with. But after my injury, it was a little hard to really recover, but great experience all the way around. Great teams. We won the ACC championship twice.
Tim Duncan's got the reputation of just being one of the nicest, you know, just one of the coolest dudes, you know, that's played in the NBA. You got to hang out with him in college. I'm just going to assume that's who Tim Duncan was.
Yes, that's who he was. I mean, he was very shy, honestly. When he first got to Wake Forest, he was younger than everybody else. Started school a little early, and, you know, came from the islands. So just not a lot of connection to U.S. university system or experience. So he and I were really close freshman year, as he got to know everybody, and just such a nice guy and always thoughtful and, you know, pretty much the persona you see. He's not looking for attention ever.
Yeah, that's cool. That's seems rare in today's sports world to come across that. So Yeah, correct. That's very cool.
If it was in today's world, I would say he would not have a Instagram account. He wouldn't have a Snapchat account. He wouldn't be someone who's blowing up Twitter. He would be silent. Yeah.
Working hard.
Let his gang do the talk. Yeah,
that's great. So I have to ask you this question, because growing up in San Diego, I adopted a team on the East Coast. You have to pick somebody. And for me, it was the early 80s, Mike Jaminski, Ernie Banks. It was Duke, which I take a ton of grief for nowadays, because, you know, they're not sure. Well liked. Yeah. So who was on those Duke teams that you, obviously that you beat out for the ACC championship back then?
Yeah, I mean, I think when, you know, my freshman year, they had a great team. We beat them at Duke, but that was the final years of Grant Hill and those guys. And then it was basically Wojciechowski, and they kind of had a downturn for a few years. Coach K took a year off during that time. And so we did really well against Duke the whole time. I think we did not lose at Duke during that time. So we've probably lost at Duke almost every time since then. So they just had a little bit of a downturn during that window. Yeah.
All right, good. Wake Forest, a private school, really well known on the education side. What were you going there? What were you studying as you were there as well?
Well, I started actually with a mathematical economics major. And back then it was really, I just looked at what was the classwork that I enjoyed, which I really liked math, and what paid well as a graduate. And I got into that program and decided that while I liked math, I didn't like math as much as some other people who were actually much better at math than I was. And so I shifted to just a business degree and got a degree in business.
What were you thinking of doing then with that degree as you were leaving? Because I know where you end up, right? It's you're heavy in the development of software and a lot. We're going to talk about all that. But what was the first thing out of school?
Well, I was always interested in what was happening with technology. You know, there was plenty of friends of mine, and one of the guys that I ended up going in business with, who just played on computers and liked to code and liked to learn things on computers while we were at school. I wasn't necessarily that. I just was fascinated by it. But honestly, I was just looking for a job that felt comfortable and felt like a fit. And I actually did. I got an internship with Pfizer after my junior year and worked for Pfizer the summer between my junior and senior year, and had a company car and a full paid job. And it was a real position that was designed to then transition into a regular role afterwards. But I realized during that time that there was a lot of excessive paperwork back then, spreadsheets and documenting everything that you do for each layer of management that you had to report to. And it felt like it was not the kind of fit for me. While I really liked the people I worked with, I thought they were great. I just didn't really feel like that was going to be a fit for me. As most people that know me know, that I tend to not be as enamored by authority over what I'm doing. I like to kind of find my own path. And so when I, you know, went back to school, I only had a semester left anyway, and I did the semester and then moved to Aspen, Colorado, worked for Aspen Ski Company, kind of tried to figure out what I was going to do. It was awesome. Got a lot of skiing in, love Colorado, and then formed a business while I was there, and basically a design business / ad agency. And really the rest is history. I never went to another interview.
I was going to say the entrepreneur runs deep in you. You want to create your own things, and that's great. Let's talk about, you know, then some of the things as you kind of progress through the 2000s, right? Let's go there. And I look at it this way: for someone like you, who's got the, you know, business savvy, you want to create, you know, your own opportunities. It seems to me that it's all about like identifying where a problem is for consumers or a problem for some industry, and then coming up with a solution. Is that pretty safe? Is that kind of what you and your partner do?
For sure. And I would take it all the way back to that ad agency I mentioned, the design agency. What happened in the late 90s was we were doing a lot of print, radio, you know, that type of ad. And people started saying, hey, I need a web presence. So even though everybody was on 56K modems and it wasn't really conducive to a great experience, everybody felt like they needed to have something. And so we started doing a lot of websites, and I taught myself how to just do basic HTML, some design, and we started getting into that space. And as it progressed, we found more and more clients, and that's what ultimately transitioned me into getting a lot more into the tech side of things as I spun off from that design agency into a company with two of my Wake Forest grad friends that was really focused on simply building software solutions that were web-based for anyone that needed them. I had met a guy as the ad agency when we were working with a client in Nashville, we were trying to get them as a client. I played golf with him randomly, just at a public course, got paired with him, told him about what we were talking about doing with taking traditional goods and putting them online. And he said, man, that sounds awesome for us. We have all these things in our warehouse we'd love to sell. I'll get back with you. Let's do something. And so nothing ever happened there. And fast forward probably a year in advance of that, I got hurt, had to have surgery. I'm laying in the hospital pre-op with, I'm getting the IV for the anesthesia to go into surgery. And I hear this voice through the curtain next to me. And it was completely recognizable as the guy who I had played golf with like a year before. And we started chatting through the curtain. And he was like, man, I've been meaning to call you. Just hasn't gotten around to it. Please call me after surgery. So we both had our surgeries. After the surgery, I call him. We reconnect. It's a big, big distributor in Nashville. We do a deal to solve their problem, which was taking all of the products they had that they could sell online, building them into a web-based business to sell and ship direct out of their warehouse. And so that was the initial impetus to roll off the business from the ad agency, start a new one with two guys, friends of mine from Wake Forest. It was self-funding because we did a deal with them to pay for it, to build the site, to build the application. And then we built a lot of applications in order to service that we could then sell software as a service to other companies. Wow. And that company was called Six Train Technologies. We began working for another company with another company, shared an office with them in Atlanta called MemberClix. We merged with MemberClix because we were providing all the form builder tools for MemberClix. And then MemberClix grew and grew. And then, you know, we were solving really the association management space, software as a service to run a membership, any membership that was out there, and all the forms that are needed for that. And then that ultimately was acquired. And I moved on to start pursuing what we're working on today through various failures to get to the point where we are now. And I think if I was to look back at a lot of the things that shaped when businesses have been most successful, it's if you can find someone who has a specific need and go address that need, and that need, you know, allows for enough money to be paid to solve it, that's where you really want to focus your efforts, because those businesses have worked best for me versus the ones where I thought I had an idea that someone else needed and I could make something that sounded really cool. Because we did a really cool product that we launched it called Pathcrosser that me and Clark, my partner, launched South by Southwest in 2011. It was awesome. But it was basically to show you where you cross paths with people using location data that was check-in data from apps like Foursquare and Facebook and some other apps. It was really fun. We had a party with Questlove playing at the South by Southwest. We had lots of, you know, hey, this is awesome. Everybody's going to use it. A lot of people download the app. No monetization strategy. It was fun, but didn't really have a business behind it. So, you know, you learn from those failures. You learn from making mistakes, from trying to follow ideas versus following demand. And over time, I think that one of the things I was afraid of as a younger person was failing all the time. I'd try and prevent that or try and hide that. And then the encouragement I would give to anybody who's getting started right now is welcome the first failures, because the second you get those failures, the things that you learn from them can be applied to every single thing you do as you go forward and will definitely give you an advantage and lead to success.
Have you done any mentoring, you know, for younger guys or girls coming out of college, or have you ever thought about doing that?
I've thought about it, but I've done a little bit lightly, you know, just here and there, but not to the level that I think someday I might consider doing. It's always been that I'm chasing whatever is going on, you know, that day with these different businesses, and I haven't had the time and the resources to do it the way that I feel like would be the most useful. Nice. I've been on the board of a couple of different companies, tried to help in their initial startup, but nothing more than that.
Let's let's get to the world of real estate. So how does that enter the picture for you? Yeah.
So that was, you know, that's also a great example of what I just said, which is Clark and I had an idea for Lolo. It was designed to be a rewards app with the mission of local people supporting local independent businesses. It was designed to be, you know, after a period of time where there'd been a lot of companies that had really come out with discount coupons, half off coupons, a lot of the things that were designed to drive traffic to businesses, but not necessarily benefit them wholly. It was kind of a, hey, here's some people, but we're going to take a lot of this revenue. And we thought, can we create something that's more sustainable for local independent businesses that gives them a competitive, not even advantage, but just level the playing field with a lot of the big box stores, the big chains, and a lot of the companies that have rolled up companies and have large marketing budgets. How can we help preserve and keep the local vibe alive in each community? Because that's what's so unique. It's like I talked about with Nashville. We launched it in Asheville, North Carolina, and there's such a unique local vibe there. And when you go to different communities around the world and you experience their local businesses, that's what makes them unique. That's what makes them special. That's what we want to preserve. And it creates that community feel for both the visitors, but also the people who live there. They have something that's special to them. So the initial Lolo app, we went and got local independent businesses to join our program and say that they would kick back some discount into the program. We went to MasterCard, Visa, and Amex and got them to, we facilitated where an independent consumer like yourself could put your credit card in Lolo, register it. And then when you spent at these local vendors, you would earn local dollars back. So you would be a loyal local. You would get Lodo, local dollars in your app. You could then spend that Lodo on any of the rewards that those local businesses made available, like a latte and a pastry at a coffee shop, a candle at a boutique, you know, something that was tangible, meaningful, that you could use your dollars, local dollars that you've earned to reward yourself and support the local business, because everything was keeping it within the network. It was a great experiment. It was a great experience. We learned a lot. We grew the business. We got a lot of users, but we really, at the end of the day, didn't have a great monetization strategy because we were counting on the local vendors to pay for it. And so we said, what, you know, is this sustainable long term? But we got, you know, again, we had a certain point, you take a turn, and we had a local brokerage in Asheville, North Carolina, Beverly Hanks, and we had a meeting with them. They were doing each month, they're sending out a little something to their sphere. All of the agents were sending an email with a little suggestion of something to do, a discount to their sphere of influence, their network of people. But they didn't really like it. It wasn't great. It was kind of, you know, sometimes the discounts weren't so good. It was something that, you know, needed to be improved on. And so they asked us, hey, could we just buy some of the things that are in your local network, these rewards? Can you buy the stuff that people can buy with Lodo? Can we buy and then send them out? And so that began the initial discussion for what is now Lolo, which is how can we help them stay top of mind with an item of value, with something meaningful and local, with a write-up, with pictures, just something that monthly goes out in an automated way and keeps them connected with their clients, contacts, referral partners, anybody that they want to build their sales network around. And so we did an alpha group with Beverly Hanks, honed it, figured out how to send emails, then send text messages, then give them the data that they wanted to see. And they were our first client. We ran that for a year and then began to expand outside of there. We're now in 250 different markets around North America. Wow.
You know, the actual curating of the local businesses, you know, we've had long conversations, you and I, about that. There's some work to be done there, correct?
Yes, I would say this has been a business that started as more of a technology business that has really morphed into a curation business, with people getting information, connections with the local community, and then being able to provide that at scale to people. But that is our main core competency. I mean, we now have a team of people that curate gifts and it's an important part of it because the gifts need to be meaningful. They need to be relevant. They need to be at great spots. They need to be local, you know, and feel local. And that's the differentiator that we have and that we provide to agents. And it's something that can consistently go out at a very low cost and keep you top of mind and get opened, especially in a time when there's so much noise, so many people sending so many different spam emails. This gives you something that you can support and you have content that you can talk about with all of your sphere of influence.
Right. You've talked about this before. I've heard you say this many times to agents who come up to you to talk about Lolo. It doesn't really matter if they redeem it, right? It just doesn't matter because it's the idea that you're sending this to them every month.
Correct. Well, and I would say for the local businesses, we want a certain level of redemption, and luckily we get redemption, but the main goal for the sender, you know, the typical agent speaking in the real estate world, they're looking to have something that keeps them visible, top of mind every month with anyone that could refer them business or use them again. And there's a lot of options out there that can be costly, time consuming, difficult to execute. We try to create something that is very, very seamless. They just put their contacts in and then they trust that a thoughtful, meaningful message with a gift is going out from their email with their branding each month. And so we're trying to take down all those barriers and give them that value. And when people get these gifts in the email and text, they open them. You know, they want to see what it is. It's local to them, so it's meaningful. It may be a business they haven't seen before or learned about. They can learn something new about a local independent business. And so the agent is providing inherent value. They're providing information and they're providing a gift each month in an email. And so that creates high engagement. Yeah. Now, they can also take it and redeem it. And we do, and that's, you know, a large part of what happens. But the first layer of what's the value to the agent is simply that being top of mind, and it's the thought that counts. Someone opens something, they go, oh, wow, that was nice. That was thoughtful. That the psychology of receiving something that was given to you creates a very positive response and makes people feel good. And that's really what we deliver.
A little dopamine hit, always good, right?
Yeah.
What's next for Lolo? Is there something you're looking at that you can talk about? I don't, you know, sometimes I ask this question and people go, well, you know, we're doing some things.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of the things that people that are in the industry know that we're going to be doing. So it's not really so much a surprise, but it's just making every bit of this more accessible via a lot of other products so that whether you use a CRM of some type, whether you're, you know, building your own application, whether you're using social channels and you want to integrate something, some component of what we do to automate adding people to your list and sending gifts. I think our next vision is mainly just making this more and more accessible and making the feedback loops better so that you learn, hey, when I put someone in, this is what happened. This is how many times they opened it. This is when they redeemed it. Then I can be more educated in how I trigger new gifts or new messaging or new calls, just understanding your network of people. If you're in sales, understanding when they're more likely to buy makes it more fertile ground for you to make your outreach. So everything that we're doing is going to be designed to help all the software that's out there and, you know, the AI buzzwords that are going on, all the tools that are designed to try and create more and more relevant content. We're going to try and plug in everywhere that we can to make that better. And then I think, you know, parts of that will also be allowing different cadence descending of gifts, maybe different types of gifts, maybe, you know, different things around that, but it'll always revolve around staying with our mission of supporting locally owned independent businesses and providing tools to make sure they have a level playing field with all the big box stores and big brands.
I'm watching the clock here. I'm gonna go ahead and give you the final question here. Now, you're not a realtor. I don't think you've, you know, really had any experience in that side of the place, but you've been around them for a long time now. And so in your opinion, what one piece of advice would you give a new agent just getting started?
Well, I'm going to be biased in this because my knowledge is really around sales and when you're thinking about long-term sales cycles that have large ticket items that are infrequent purchases, I would say focus on relationships, focus on your network. And from day one as a new agent, do not be afraid to reach out and begin building your sphere of influence. I think the thing I see mostly with any sales job is that people will allow fear to take over and prevent them from doing something. Fear of rejection when they make a phone call, fear of failure when they go to an appointment. And at the end of the day, each one of those failures, like I said earlier, is so valuable. I mean, if I look back and think about, had I prevented myself from failing at something, would it have been an improvement in my career? And I would say absolutely not. In fact, I wish I had failed faster. Mm-hmm. And the faster I fail, the more I learn about what I need to do to succeed. And so, and the only way I can think to tell a new agent to get started is focus on relationships, because over time, you know, if they really want to be in it for a long haul, they've got to start with making those relationships, proving they can do something, and then working referrals from there, because I believe that's the best way to build a long-term foundation for the business.
That's awesome. Matthew, if somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you or with Lolo?
I would say go to joinlolo.com. Anybody can always email me at matthew@joinlolo.com.
This has been great. I knew I would get some things out of there that I hadn't heard before, which is very cool. I really love what you're doing. Awesome. I've talked to a lot of different people about what you're doing and said, you know, like, you got to call these people. You got to understand how affordable and powerful this tool could be. But I think you've done fantastic work. So congratulations on that. And thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to The Real Estate Sessions. Please head over to ratethispodcast.com/RE sessions to leave a review or a rating, and subscribe to The Real Estate Sessions podcast at your favorite podcast listening app.